A new report from the American Federation of Teachers finds a big mismatch in urban schools when it comes to teacher diversity. Looking at 9 major American cities, the report finds much lower proportions of African-American teachers compared to the student populations, and that diversity gap is getting wider over time.
No Wisconsin cities were included in the study, but a report released in August by the Public Policy Forum found a similar story in Milwaukee, with only 10% of teachers from minority groups, while 44% of students are people of color.
Does it matter? Does this mismatch affect educational outcomes? Dakota Irby joins us now. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Educational Policy Studies at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He's done work researching Milwaukee schools. Dakota, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So is this an important issue when it comes to how things come out for students, Dakota?
Absolutely. It certainly is. It was echoed in the report that was recently released from the Albert Schenker Institute. And these issues in terms of the disparities of the teachers who are teaching students, and especially in urban schools and also in suburban schools as well, there's an underrepresentation of racial and ethnic minority teachers. And it is a big issue. The research base around this isn't as strong as it could be because it's a difficult topic to study in terms of the relationship between the composition of the teaching force, the student population, and student outcomes. But there's a growing body of research that definitely demonstrates that teacher diversity is very important in terms of student achievement and outcomes.
So what does it do for a student, say, in an urban or suburban community, a student of color, to be in a school where none of the teachers are from the same background, where they don't look like them? What's the problem for that student?
Well, there's kind of two ways that folks look at it. One is considered passive. And so the passive way of looking at it has to do with the teacher doesn't do anything necessarily, but just their presence actually makes the students perform, makes the students be more engaged, provides role models, kind of like a model for the students to aspire to be like. And that's kind of a passive thing. There's nothing that really the teacher does other than just, you know, have their own identity. The other way of thinking of it is active. And there's research that demonstrates that teachers tend to give more attention, more positive feedback, more help, more assistance to students who have the same racial and ethnic identity as they do. And so both of those bodies of research demonstrate that either passively and actively, teachers play a significant role in how students experience school.
The national report says there's actually a decent number of minority members going into education in the first place, but retention, keeping them in the schools, especially these urban schools, is a problem. What do you think could be done about that?
Improving the school quality. That is the issue. I think that there's that. But, you know, part of it is just to make the teaching profession more attractive than it is, especially in urban schools. So making the profession itself more attractive. As most folks know, teachers, public schools in particular, get a pretty hard raw deal in terms of media coverage. We don't see a whole lot about what's going right in schools. We see a credible amount of media attention around what's not working and those sorts of things. So one of them is just making the profession itself more attractive. And the other part is to improve the current conditions and, you know, in terms of retaining teachers, and whether that means you know, more teacher autonomy are some of the things that teachers cite, not feeling like they're valued, their voices are valued, not feeling like they're valued as professionals and those sorts of things. So both making it more attractive for teachers to come into the profession, and also making it a place where people want to work and a job that people want to do.
Has there ever been talk, or maybe this exists already, of a kind of a school-to-school pipeline where, say, a student from the schools we're talking about is recruited to go to educational school, maybe given student loan forgiveness or something to give them incentive to go back to the school they came from and teach there and stay for a while?
I'm not familiar with any specific models that ask the students to go back to their school. But there are a pretty substantial number of programs that provide students with the, financial incentives, loan repayments, and those sorts of things to teach in high-need schools. And those typically tend to be either rural schools or in urban schools. One of the challenges is a lot of times people actually use those as mechanisms just to pay back their loans and those sorts of things. And so they actually have a relatively short stay. So they're there for the 3 years or the 5 years that's required for them to meet the requirements of their loan repayments. And then a lot of times they might move to a more a suburban school or a school where there's the conditions they prefer the conditions of those schools. So, but there's a number of programs. Males of color are vastly, vastly underrepresented. Clemson University has a program called Call Me Mister. That's a model. It basically recruits black males in particular to go into the teaching profession, trains them, and then they teach in high need schools. And so there are people experimenting with those kinds of pipeline models right now.
Dakota Irby stays with us. We're talking about minority teachers in urban schools, places like Milwaukee, where the diversity of the teachers doesn't match up with the student population.
You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. If you're an educator, do you think it helps to have a diverse staff that matches the local population? If you're a member of a minority community, is it important to have teachers from your community in the school? Call now at 800-642-1234. We continue our conversation now with Dakota Irby from the University of Illinois at Chicago, looking at new research around the country and in Milwaukee showing that in schools with large minority populations, there are few teachers of color.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you think it's important to have the population of teachers match the population of students when it comes to diversity? What could get more people of color into the teaching profession? Are you a teacher yourself, maybe from a minority group? Well, what's been your experience? What would get more people that you know to follow in your footsteps? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dakota, a line from the National Report we've been talking about, this is a subject heading, teacher diversity is an educational civil right for students. Do you agree with that?
I think it is, especially because it relates to educational opportunities and quality. Going back again to the idea of a strong research base in terms of active engagement of teachers, we know that teachers are more actively engaged with students who they share a racial or ethnic identity with. And so just that alone demonstrates how important it is for students of color to have teachers of color in their schools. So it is very important issue because not having those teachers of color in the school actually is a way of actually denying some of the active engagement that students need to do well in school.
Now, given the current reality that there are mostly white teachers in these diverse schools, maybe people from outside of the community, are there effective ways that schools are training these teachers to meet the students at least halfway?
Yes, there is a huge movement of, a lot of work being done around cultural competence, a lot of work being done around culturally responsiveness and those sorts of things. But again, what the research shows in terms of active engagement and teachers being active is that even with all of that stuff, it's very difficult to have them still be engaged as though they were engaged with the student that they share the same racial identity with. And this is the same thing that's true for white students. If a white student has white teachers, those teachers take a different kind of active interest and engagement through how they interact and how they work with that student. And we're talking about things like, expectations. We're also talking about praise. We're talking about positive reinforcement. We're talking about being called on. All of those sorts of basic things tend to happen more if the teacher shares a racial identity with the students that they're teaching.
This issue is out there with this Milwaukee report from the summer and also now in this newer national report in 9 major cities. But is it on the radar of the schools themselves? Are schools, are leaders trying to tackle this issue now?
In my experience, yes. I don't know that I would say trying to tackle it, but it is on people's minds. It's on people's tongues. Wherever I go and we talk about cultural competency, we talk about cultural responsiveness, and we're talking about racial equity in schools, one of the things that always comes up is hiring and retention and what needs to be done to diversify not only the teaching force, but also the leadership of the schools.
Is this something, do the white students in these schools benefit from having a more diverse teacher population?
Well, this becomes a bit of an argument here, right? again, what the research demonstrates is that the white students are more will benefit most from having white teachers. But as we think about the world that they're going to be going into and the increasing diversity of the world and the world that young people are going to step into, there's a strong case to be made for making sure that white students have access to teachers who are going to give them the kind of exposure to different kind of cultural norms, different kinds of ways of seeing the world, ways of being that are going to help prepare those white students to succeed in a world and in a nation that's becoming increasingly diverse. A third grader today's world is going to be, their workplace is going to be fundamentally different than what many of the workplaces are even today. And so thinking about those kind of things, I do think there are tremendous benefits. Again, the research base on this is kind of shaky. A lot of the policy around this is based off of kind of assertions about what people think should and would benefit students. But in terms of a research base, there's nothing to demonstrate that students won't do well, white students won't do well or as well if they have students, teachers who don't share their racial group.
Let's bring in a caller. We've got Rick on the line in La Crosse. Rick, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I love the topic. I'm a white guy, and I used to teach in an African-American immersion school. I would agree with the sentiments that it'd be great if we had more teachers of color or whatever, you know, we're looking at different races and even cultures. On the flip side of that, one of the things that I think is a benefit to society and definitely was a benefit to me as a young teacher was being around a population of people that I never grew up around. And I learned so much from my students that it really changed and helped shape my views towards the African-American people and African-American culture in a positive.
Rick, I want to give Dakota a chance to get on this. Thanks for calling. So cross-cultural opportunities can be a positive, Dakota.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what I was just mentioning before, that that kind of cross-cultural exchange, the opportunity to be exposed to folks who we're going to bring, you know, present different ideas, different ways of seeing the world, different ways of being, is tremendously beneficial, because that's the world that the students will be moving into once they finish school.
We'll leave it there. Dakota, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Rob and Veronica, thank you very much.
We've been talking to Dakota Irby, assistant professor in the Department of Educational Policy Studies at the University of Illinois at Chicago.
The University of Wisconsin-Madison is going forward with a plan that could dramatically change who gets to attend college there. The university is looking to drop its cap on non-resident enrollment, currently set at 27.5%, while still guaranteeing around 3,600 seats to freshmen from Wisconsin each year. An education committee voted in favor of the plan today, and the full Board of Regents will take it up tomorrow.
Supporters of the proposal say it's necessary to help boost the state's workforce. Critics worry about the motivation for the plan, some calling it a cash grab by the university, others saying it could negatively affect in-state students.
Noel Radomski joins us now. He's director of the Wisconsin Center of the Advancement for Post-Secondary Education. Noel, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, Noel, as we mentioned in the introduction there, this proposal passed a committee vote this morning and heads to the full Board of Regents tomorrow. And first off, what is your reaction there?
Surprised, a little disappointed, but not at all unexpected.
Why do you say that?
Surprised in the sense that there wasn't any meaningful conversation during the education committee. Not unexpected. They've been talking about this for a while now, but not at the level that they talked about. They talked about perhaps increasing the cap again, but now they completely eliminated. So that was the surprise. The disappointment was they ignored several issues that are very important to Wisconsin families, such as they have no minimum requirement for the number of transfer students from the state of Wisconsin. They have a minimum requirement for Wisconsin residents, freshmen, for the next 4 years, but absolutely no minimum requirement for Wisconsin transfer students.
Now, you say this is not unexpected, and UW-Madison Chancellor Rebecca Blank has been championing this proposal. Why does she say that it's needed?
Well, there's two things. She stated several times that it's needed to generate tuition revenue to offset the state budget cuts. than she has recently talked about the workforce development needs. But really, it is about the revenue. Because just think about this. They're going to increase non-resident undergraduates at the non-residents for the freshman class. It'll take them 4 to 5 years, 4 to 5 years to graduate. So if they really want to address workforce development needs, it's going to take at least 5 years. Plus, 15% of non-resident graduates stay in the state of Wisconsin once they complete their degree. So I think it's humorous that they put it under the cloud of workforce development when, in fact, it's all about money.
Well, with big budget cuts like the university is facing, the university needs to make ends meet, and this seems like a way to increase revenue, even if it may not be ideal on all fronts. So do you see a better alternative here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I completely understand and appreciate the chancellor's leadership to generate revenue and reduce cost. Here, I'll just toss out three. One, reduce the number of Minnesota reciprocity students. Take that gap, take that number, increase the number of Wisconsin resident freshmen, and also increase the number of international students who are paying the most of all tuition rates. It's the highest. Number two, you could reduce the number of what they call non-resident domestic students, meaning students from California, New Jersey, New York, etc. Reduce that, take and then recruit international students, again, who pay the highest rate of tuition. So there's a whole array of different options they could have pursued that protect the number of Wisconsin residents, both freshmen as well as transfer students, but they elected not to do that. And they went for the easy prize, and they couched it under workforce development because it's extremely popular right now.
Well, you mentioned increasing the international students attending the UW-Madison. Now, that is something that has been discussed and in fact, that has a lot of proponents. Where is that now?
Well, they created a new tuition category just for international students. So they'll be paying $1,000 more than non-resident undergraduates. So that was number one. Number two, they've talked about that as a campus priority. We do live in a global society. The question becomes, what do we view, what does the campus view the role of the international student? Is it exclusive? Is it primarily about generation of revenue? Or do we want to recruit different international students from multiple countries in order to create a more diverse undergraduate experience for all students, including Wisconsin residents. But they don't talk about that. It's about generation of revenue. They don't talk about what's the educational purpose of recruiting more international students, which is really unfortunate.
Now, as another one of your suggestions, you mentioned either doing away with or at least severely reducing the reciprocity agreement between UW system schools and UW and Minnesota schools. And at first blush, that could be pretty unpopular with people here in Wisconsin. Second, you talked about as part of that packaging in more Wisconsin residents coming to UW-Madison. Do you worry about overcrowding in classes? We're already seeing some professors going on the record saying they're worried about that with this new concern here with taking the caps off. So do you have the same problem there?
Yeah, those are very good questions. And number one, my recommendation is reducing the Minnesota reciprocity students on the UW-Madison campus only. I mean, you look at the enrollment, UW-River Falls, I believe it's over 60% of the students are from Minnesota. So I wouldn't at all suggest changing that, exclusively UW-Madison. Number two, you're absolutely right. There are many problems right now that we have at our gateway courses. I mean, there's articles about chemistry labs that are open from 8 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. that we cannot address all the students who are taking those courses, computer science, which is very popular. So I wouldn't suggest increasing the number of students, freshmen, which is about 6,400. However, today the Chancellor Blank said we'll likely increase the undergraduate freshman class by 200 or 300. That has never been discussed on campus. As you talked to faculty and staff and students, they're growing wait lists. There are faculty positions with those who have retired or left that have gone unfilled. So we have less faculty, we have less teaching assistants, we have greater waiting lists, and we have higher number of students in courses. So why they are doing this, it's not logical. But again, it's chasing the money without talking about what are the educational imperatives, what are the educational consequences of these decisions.
We're talking with Noel Radomski right now, director of the Wisconsin Center of the Advancement of Postsecondary Education, talking about the UW's proposal to lift its non-resident enrollment cap at UW-Madison. And early on, Noel, you expressed concern about transfer students in the state. These are students who would go to the two-year colleges, UW colleges, and maybe transfer into the UW system. Tell us more about what that concern is there.
The concern there is we built the UW system. Well, I should say our legislators and governors over time have built the UW system specifically so that you could transfer. You could start at the UW colleges campus. You could start at the Wisconsin Technical College campus. And then you could make your way to a four-year university, UW-Stevens Point, UW-Milwaukee, UW-Madison. And that was part of the philosophy of we want to increase access and economic and social and economic mobility. Because right now, because of the increased cost of higher education, as student loans continue to go up and student indebtedness and default rates are going up, more students, especially low-income, first-generation, and underrepresented students, are start at UW colleges or the tech colleges. So if we start to close the door for transfer students from Wisconsin to UW-Madison, that is a significant change in public policy and a significant change in the values of the UW-Madison campus to Wisconsin families.
Is there any research out there on this that you've taken a look at saying what sort of effect it would have when a public research university gets rid of some of these caps on non-resident students? What happens?
Yeah, there have been two research reports that just came out recently in referee journals. And they talked about some of the consequences are that there's a reduction in the proportion of state residents in the freshman and undergraduate population. And as Chancellor Blank said earlier today, they're going to increase the number of non-resident undergrads by 200 to 300, which means there'll be a decrease in the proportion of non-resident, of resident students. So that's going to prove true. There's going to be a reduction in the number of low-income residents and first-generation students. That already is taking place. We now have more legacy students than we do first-generation students. So the dial is going the opposite way than I think most people would expect. There's less underrepresented students, African-American students, for example, or Hispanic. So then we have more racial and class isolation on campus, which directly affects the campus climate, which affects teaching and learning on campus.
Now, you mentioned that non-resident, or rather that resident Wisconsin freshman number. Now, originally the number that the UW had put out was 3,500. It's now been raised to 3,600. Does that alleviate some of your concern?
Not really. Because the numbers that UW-Madison had for freshmen, resident freshmen, were up to 3,800 in 2013. Okay? So they're saying they're going to go with a minimum of 3,600, when in fact we had 3,800 2 years ago. So it was a political decision. Let's add 100. But in reality, it's less than what we had 2 years ago. And number two, there's no minimum requirement for Wisconsin transfer students. So it really gives a message. What does UW-Madison think about serving Wisconsin residents?
And Noel, just quickly as we wrap up here, the full Board of Regents is going to take this up tomorrow. Do you think it's going to pass? And what are you going to be watching for in the coming year?
Yes, it'll pass. It was a unanimous vote today, and they'll do the same thing tomorrow. What I'll be looking at is trends. What do the numbers say? And where will the UW-Madison campus be spending its money? Will they be spending its money and programs on recruiting Wisconsin kids, low-income kids from northern Wisconsin, or would they be spending money recruiting students from other countries and wealthy school districts around the country?
And we leave it there. Noel, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
We were speaking there with Noel Radomski, director of the Wisconsin Center of the Advancement of Post-Secondary Education. He joined us to talk about UW-Madison's proposal to lift its non-resident enrollment cap.